Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite time of day, getting to spend time with you prescribing hope for healthy families. And we are going to start your week off right here. We're talking today about supporting disaster relief efforts. That is our prescription for hope today. Every day we have a small action that you can do to find hope in the world. And I find that I find the most hope by serving others, by giving generously, by meeting other people who are in need, and coming alongside those who are also there to serve. We live in a world that is chaotic, that is unpredictable, that is anything but calm, and we live in a world where disasters happen, where we see tragedies befall other people, and there is such hope in seeing that even though we live in a broken world, and we know that God's word tells us in this world we will have trouble, but we can take heart and be of good cheer because God has overcome the world. I'll tell you that some of my greatest times of finding hope have been in those times of deepest disaster. And we're going to talk to somebody who knows a little something about that today. We're talking to Dustin Sullivan. He is with 8 Days of Hope. If you are a regular listener, you will recognize 8 Days of Hope. This is a ministry we have partnered with to promote many times. They're an amazing ministry that's supported by you, our listeners, through American Family Association, which is really fantastic. And 8 Days of Hope is an organization that has a lot of different, that has 4 different specific outreaches. They do a lot of things, but through 4 different outreaches, they have a rebuilding ministry, they have a rapid response ministry, they have a safe house ministry that builds homes for people who need it, particularly people who have experienced human trafficking. A lot of you know that's my primary area of work as a professor, and so we have had conversations about that. And then they have mass feeding ministries. And so we're going to talk to Dustin today. He is the director of the rapid response arm of 8 Days of Hope. And we've had Dustin on the show before, but just really quick. And we thought, you know, we need to have a longer conversation because Dustin, you went from a banker to a disaster response guy. Like, you went from exchanging money for chainsaws. That is a pretty big transition. And I would love to know how you came to ministry with 8 Days of Hope.
I did. That is a big jump. And thank you for asking, Jessica. I hope you're doing well today. I've been working at the bank for quite some time, but I've always had a servant's heart. I've always wanted to help other people. That's just the way I was raised. And so I began volunteering with 8 Days of Hope back in 2019. And from the first time I had volunteered, I completely fell in love with this ministry, just the organization and the structure and the love that was shared by others, the other volunteers and the homeowners. And I just said, that's something that I would love to volunteer more of. And so I continued volunteering time again. I would take vacation time off of work. I would take time away from my family, away from my hometown. And I would go out to these different communities once a disaster hit. And I would go and serve alongside 8 Days of Hope. The relationships, they grew stronger with me and the other volunteers. And I just got to liking it more and more. I would go back home every time, Jessica, and I would tell my church family, look, this is something y'all really need to check out, something that's near and dear to my heart, something I would love to invest in for long term. And so in 2023, I was sitting there at my bank, and it was in January, and I really felt like the Lord was calling me to full-time ministry, but I wasn't quite exactly sure what that meant. I wasn't sure if I was ready to become a senior pastor at a church or perhaps a youth pastor, children's pastor. I wasn't sure. So my wife and I, we looked at becoming house parents at a children's home there in Alabama. And we looked at that, and we really felt like that was what we wanted to do. At least I knew that's what I wanted to do. My wife, not completely sold out on that idea. So we tried that, and that didn't quite work out. And that door was shut. I was disappointed for a little while and quite unsure why God had opened that door but then had shut it. And I wasn't fully understanding at that point, but I believe he was preparing my heart to get ready to move from my hometown, because 2 short weeks later, I'm sitting there in my office again, and I see where 8 Days of Hope has a job opening for rapid response director. I remember immediately calling my wife, Marley, and telling her, look, this is where my heart is. This is my passion. I said, I'm going to apply for this job. I said, I probably won't get it, but because I'm a banker, and that is dealing with removing trees, tarping roofs, mucking out homes. I said, I probably won't get it, but I'm going to apply for it. And I know you always wanted to live here in Greenwood, Mississippi, and we'll have to move a couple hours north. And she said, well, go ahead and apply for it. And anyway, long story short, here I am. I'm loving it. I'm always on the move, busy, 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 but I get to see God-sized stories every day.
You know, that is so encouraging, Dustin. I love hearing that story, because I truly believe there is no such thing as coincidence. And when your heart is aligned, I think of the verse from Psalms, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. And, you know, some people look at that verse like an if-then thing, like, oh, I'll delight myself in the Lord and then he's going to make all my dreams come true. But what happens is your desires start to change and they align with what God has planned for you. And it's more than we could ever ask or imagine. And as you were talking, Dustin, I was thinking about other people we have interviewed who had similar experiences that you did, who came out of a completely different world to service. We talked to a guy who was a bridge builder, like a literal bridge builder, like built bridges over water. And he started a ministry for dads in pregnancy centers. And we talked to Mark Hancock with Trail Life, and he was a nursing home administrator and then became the CEO of Trail Life. And then even the CEO of 8 Days of Hope, Steve Tiber, he was in building materials, and then now he runs this nonprofit. So I think it's really amazing to see how you might think, oh, well, that those kinds of things don't matter. But I'm sure that there were transferable skill sets, that you had experience in leadership and connections, and that God was forging your character to enter into this time of ministry. So I love hearing things like that. And if you're out there listening and thinking, you know, I felt a call to ministry, but it's so wildly different than what I'm doing. Hey, look at Moses in the Bible. I don't think that he expected to go from, you know, being the leader of Egypt to going out of Egypt, but that those are the stories that God loves to write. Well, tell us, Dustin, about 8 Days of Hope. Tell us about it is about as it is now. We talked about it a little bit last week in Share-a-thon. What is 8 Days of Hope? What are you doing?
Yes, ma'am. So the arm that I direct is called Rapid Response, and we go in immediately after a tornado hits or a flood or a hurricane or in some cases a wildfire. We're going anywhere from 24 to 48 hours after the storm. We, of course, want to allow the first responders or in the search and rescue workers to go in and do their jobs before we actually come and we clean up people's yards and clean up trees off of people's homes. But that's what we do. We bring in heavy equipment. We have skid steers, and we have boom lifts. We have excavators. We bring all of that equipment in, and we help people. But we also bring in volunteers from all over the country that want to come and serve. We have our faithful leaders. We have 281 volunteer leaders that serve with us. And these leaders, we have them from all over the country. We have them from Arkansas, Texas, Mississippi, North Carolina, Ohio, Indiana, New York. We even have a couple in Alaska that are serving with us right now while we're deployed. And they just love to go out and serve and just share with people about the gospel of Christ. But then also show people what Jesus looks like through our actions and just bring that light. So that's what we're all about.
You know, I think having been in the aftermath of disasters, I live here in Houston, in the Houston area, and we have had hurricanes. Probably the most devastating one of recent memory was Hurricane Harvey. And, you know, I think about that time in my own community, Dustin, and I think about how we didn't anticipate 51 inches of rain in 2 days, which is what happened. And, you know, you just see people in really desperate situations. At that time, the average 911 call response time was about 9 hours. We had friends that we knew who had been in boats all night long that were stuck in trees. We had, you know, people who were escaping out of their second story windows and just, you know, the Cajun Navy that came from Louisiana trying to help in that response time. And there is something really, really moving about having strangers come in and help you. So my sister's house flooded during this time. And I went in there. And of course, after a flood, Dustin, it is just gross. Everything smells. It is moldy. It is damp. Everything is muddy. And you start ripping sheetrock is what you do. And actually, there were people from 8 Days of Hope that were here in our community and being able to walk into my sister's house and say, do you know my sister? Nope, I don't. I just heard there was a need. And here I am ripping out sheetrock. There is something really, really powerful about meeting people there at their point of need. But it's not just about those needs, about providing food or providing, you know, a knife to cut sheetrock. It's about providing the hope of the gospel, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Well, so tell me about that. Tell me about your Christian mission and how disaster response really is a ministry.
It is. And some people don't quite grasp or understand that. But just, I'll give you a story that happened just 30 minutes ago. So we're at this lady's house named Mary, and she has two giant oak trees in her backyard that are just a tangled mess from the recent tornadoes. So I'm talking to Miss Mary, and I'm asking her, were you at home during the storm? She says, yes, her and her daughter were at the house during the storm. And she said, Dustin, I believe if that tree would have turned and had not fallen the way it fell and instead fallen through my house, she said, I have no doubt that it would have killed my daughter and myself. And I said, well, Miss Mary, I said, you know, no one ever knows when their last breath is going to take place. I said, Miss Mary, do you know where you would be if you died that night? And she looked at me. She said, I have no doubt in my mind that I would be with heaven with the Maker. And I said, Miss Mary, that's it. That's it. So we always want to make sure that the people we're talking to know about Jesus. If they don't, we certainly want to give that opportunity of hope, living hope, to everyone that we meet.
Oh, well, God bless Miss Mary. Those kinds of things are really scary, the aftermath of tornadoes, and they really make you reconsider what's important in your life. And I'm so glad you were able to share that with her, Dustin, and looking at, you know, just what is really important. And I think that's one of the best things about bringing the hope of the gospel, because when we bring other things, yes, they're helpful, but they're so dependent on just good people. You just have to think, okay, a bad thing happened. Hopefully good people will show up. And that is reassuring. I don't want to discount that. But there's something really powerful about the narrative that God has a plan. He sees, he knows. Yes, we live in a broken world. He weeps alongside us. He is sad alongside us. He grieves alongside us. But he is there, and he is providing hope through those people who are responding just like you, which is really, really exciting. Well, if you want to help out, you can go to 8daysofhope.com. That's E-I-G-H-T, spell out the number 8, 8daysofhope.com. And you can look and see what they do. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk to Dustin about some opportunities to serve. Maybe you've always wanted to learn how to use a chainsaw. Well, we'll have that information for you. Maybe you think, that's not me, but there is a night of hope. There is a concert that you can go to. There are ways that you can give if you have financial resources. And there are ways that you can pray for the work of 8 Days of Hope. Because I'm telling you, for me as a nurse and as a human being who has been involved in disasters, it is really a great opportunity to show the love of Christ and to see what they do. When you look at some of the impact that 8 Days of Hope has had, 10,790 families served, 44,644 meals served, 58,402 volunteers, and $89.9 million of work. Go to 8daysofhope.com and you can find out more. You also are supporting 8 Days of Hope through your giving to American Family Association, and we're so grateful for that. We'll be right back with more from Dustin Sullivan, the Rapid Response Director from 8 Days of Hope, when we come back. Don't go away. Because of listeners like you, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. Will you take a moment and celebrate life with me? Last year, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, this is Jessica Peck, host of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 babies are taking their first breath now because of you. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to a woman as she was deciding about the future of her child. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet heartbeat, her baby's chance at life doubled. But Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also to lead women to Christ. Last year, Preborn Network Clinic saw 8,900 women receive salvation. Your help is crucial to continue their life-saving work. Your caring, tax-deductible donation saves lives. So please be generous. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Your love can save a life. Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Who can bend my burdens and make them beautiful? Who can bring the healing to the hurt I?
Welcome back, friends. That is For the Good by Riley Clemens. And we are talking today about what is happening for the good in areas of our country that are impacted by disasters. Of course, our hearts go out to the people in California and other areas of the country who have lost their homes to wildfires. We see tornadoes, we see hurricanes, we see all kinds of disasters that happen in a world that is broken. But today we're shining a light on something really powerful. Every day we prescribe hope for healthy families, and today we're talking about the kind of hope that shows up not only with prayer, but with servant hands, with tool belts, with chainsaws, with hot meals, with shower trailers, with all of those things that are needed in disaster relief. 8 Days of Hope is more than just the name of an organization we're talking about. It is a movement. It is a mission. It's a family of volunteers who steps in when families lose everything. So whether it's a tornado or a hurricane or a flood, 8 Days of Hope has rushed in to rebuild homes, to restore communities, and to remind people that they are not alone, because hope is not just a feeling. It is something that we carry in our hands. We offer it to someone who needs it most, just like Dustin was just telling us about precious Miss Mary and offering her hope to know that no matter what happens, that God holds her future. But here is the truth. They cannot do it alone. So this is your chance to be the hands and feet of compassion. So whether you're swinging a hammer or you're serving a hot meal, every gift matters. If you are donating online, if you are giving prayers, which are the most important thing that this ministry needs, you don't need special skills, just a willing heart. So if you have ever asked, how can I make a difference? This is it. Join the movement, be the hope, and volunteer with 8 Days of Hope. So Dustin, I want to start off with some of your volunteer opportunities. You have some trainings coming up, I think, and there are ways that families can help together. So tell us all about if they want to be the kind of hope that is showing up with tool belt and chainsaws, what do they do?
Right. We do have several training sessions coming up, Jessica. We have one coming up, and I believe it is next week, as a matter of fact, next weekend. That'll be in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And if anyone is interested in signing up for that training, that'll be chainsaw training and heavy equipment training. You do have to be certified on a chainsaw or equipment before operating a chainsaw or equipment on one of our deployments. We just do that as far as a safety protocol for the other volunteers. But that will be in Cedar Rapids. And if anyone would like to sign up for that or more information about that training in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, they can go to our website, which is www.8daysofhope.com. They could sign up for it there. And then next month in May, I believe, we will have another training in Buffalo, New York. There at our remote satellite headquarters there in Buffalo. Same thing, you sign up online. And then in August, we will have another training in Tupelo, Mississippi. If you live down south and maybe that's a little bit closer, we'll have another training at our national headquarters there based in Tupelo.
Well, you know, Dustin, I've got two teenage boys and I feel like they're, you know, in school, but when we say the words chainsaw training, they're like ears are perking up and they're thinking, say what? What is that? Now, how old do you have to be to volunteer and to use this heavy equipment? Is it grownups? Let's clarify that because I feel like my boys are going to leave school and be heading up to Buffalo.
Great question. So you do have to be 16 years old to volunteer with us on a rapid response deployment. On other deployments like mass feeding or rebuild, you can be a little bit younger than 16. But 16 for rapid response, and then to operate a chainsaw, we do ask that you're at least 18 years old.
I needed you to say that. I needed you to be the bad guy, Dustin. Say
you're welcome.
Sorry.
You're welcome.
He said 18, okay? He said 18. But let's walk through that because I think there may be some people, you know, who are like, yeah, I'm all in for that. And some people who think, you know, I've never done that before. What is it going to look like? Walk us through that training as they walk through the door.
Sure.
Like, what does that actually look like? I want to make it really accessible for people who might think it's a little bit of a stretch, but maybe I can be brave.
Yeah, absolutely. So our training starts with breakfast in the morning time, just devotion. It's a welcome. Everyone gets a name tag. So you begin making new friends and introducing yourself. And then we'll have about a 3 to 4 hour classroom session where you're watching a video or you perhaps have instructors there. And they'll go everything. They'll diagnose a chainsaw for you. They'll tell you about all the different parts, what each part works, you know, how the chainsaw operates. And then, of course, safety is a large part of our classroom training of how to properly cut and stand out of the way, stand away from the cutter while you're pulling limbs, how to cut trees without pinching the bar of your chainsaw. So a lot goes into the training. And then once your classroom session is over with that afternoon, we'll have a site set up, perhaps a yard or a pasture with trees that are already laid down. And then we'll go out there and our trainers will watch over the participants as they make their cuts and just to ensure that they understand how to cut properly and safely and effectively. And then at the end of the day, we'll either certify them or tell them that they need a little bit more work. But it's always a good time.
Yeah, I think that would be such a great father-son activity, you know, to go out there and to learn together. And I have diagnosed a lot of things in my career as a nurse practitioner, Dustin. I've never diagnosed a chainsaw. When you said that, I thought, I don't even know what that means. I would definitely need some training. And you shared, Dustin, that your first experience with 8 Days of Hope was actually through a volunteer experience. What did you do for your first time?
It was. So my first time, let me think how old I was, Jessica. I was probably 32, 33 years old at the time. And so I obviously was not certified on equipment or chainsaw since it was my first time. So my first
you didn't
time
use that in the bank? You didn't need chainsaw in the bank?
You didn't need a chainsaw in the bank.
Okay.
So a lot of my first experience was pulling limbs back to the road once they're cut. And, but, you know, I understand there's a lot of people that are physically unable to climb a roof, to tarp a roof, mm-hmm. or maybe even operate a chainsaw, or in some cases even pull limbs. But we do have a lot of different opportunities. Like you mentioned earlier, we do have shower trailers, and our shower trailers in some cases are not only for our volunteers, but sometimes we go into a community that does not have water supply. And we'll set up shower trailers and bring in our own water supply, and then we'll open that shower trailer to the community. And it's nothing like a hot shower to somebody that has not had a bath or a shower in days. And so we have volunteers that'll man that station, and then we also have volunteers that'll clean the showers every afternoon. We also have laundry trailers. Same thing, Jessica. We'll clean people's laundries if their power has been out, or if there's been a flood. A utility lineman, they've gone several days without clean laundry. We'll clean their laundry too. So if you can do laundry, if you can fold laundry, if you can cook a hot meal, there's always something available for our opportunities. And then last but not least, prayer warriors. Goodness mm-hmm. gracious. Mm-hmm. We love for prayer warriors to come alongside us and pray for these volunteers and the homeowners while we're out serving.
Well, that is really encouraging to hear, because as much as I'd like to say, yeah, I would try the chainsaw, I don't think that would be me, Dustin. But, you know, helping do laundry, I love doing laundry. That would be something that I could do. And it's amazing when you're in a community in the aftermath of a disaster, you just forget how much you take for granted everyday luxuries, like a hot meal, a hot shower, clean laundry, all of those things where you just don't have it. Or even, you know, when you don't have power and you're trying to, you know, get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night and you realize it's pitch black dark. I mean, all of those things where you come in and provide those creature comforts, that's really important. And your wife, Marley, is a big part of your ministry. How do you serve together as a family, Dustin?
Yeah, good question. So that was one of the things that when I was hired on is Steve Tiber. He said, Dustin, if you come and serve with us, we want your wife and your children to be alongside with you too. You know, we understand that the age requirement for the rapid response is 16, and you and Marley have younger children, but we're going to allow that to happen because we believe in family. Family is what holds it all together. So they've been very supportive of that. My wife is a techie person by career. She's a web developer for a company based out of Mississippi. She's a contracted employee. So she is able to work from the road a lot, Jessica. And so she helps a lot with the audio visual during the rapid response. She's also a beautiful singer. So she likes to lead worship from time to time with us, but she's just, she gets along with everyone. And she really unites our staff and our leaders. And but thank you for asking about her. She plays a big role in all of it.
I love seeing everybody using their gifts. So even, you know, being a beautiful singer, you know, when those are things that you take for granted too. If you've ever been in a church service where there's no power, all of a sudden, oh, there's no microphone, there's no sound system, there's no fancy anything, you know, to make that there. But having simple, heartfelt worship to somebody who is willing to step up and sing, that can be so encouraging in the time of a disaster. And then what about your kids? Because your kids have grown up now in this ministry. How have they been involved? What have they done? How have you seen serving together as a family impact your family's faith and just your relationships?
My kids, they enjoy serving the hot meals with the feeding. They probably prefer feeding over rapid response, which I'm kind of disappointed in. But
that's honest.
Enjoy serving it. Yeah. especially my little girl. She's 10 years old. Her name is Sadie. And Sadie is in love with the lead, with the ladies that I get to work with every day. She loves to bring her air mattress and cot and sleep in the Sunday school classes with these other women. And they're just like mothers, a bunch of mothers to my little girl. And she just drinks it all up. She just loves it all. So my children, they love it. And hopefully, Jessica, my hope and desire and prayer is that my children will see what we're trying to do in these communities, that we're bringing hope. And hopefully it'll rub off on them when they get to be adults and they start making their own big boy decisions and big girl decisions. Hopefully that'll take a role and a part in their decisions.
Oh, absolutely. It is really moving to serve together with your kids. Just recently, we had a family in our church whose home was destroyed by a tornado that came through. And of course, you know, they issue a call for volunteers at the church. And my husband and my son went out there and it was muddy. My husband got poison ivy, by the way. So it's not, you know, there's not some glamorous things that are there. But to be there, you know, with my son and to see, you know, this family that had lost everything, but yet see more than 100 volunteers show up and say, we are here for you. We are going to be the hands and feet of Christ. We are going to serve you. We're going to love you. Some of them knew them. Some of them didn't know them. And there's something really powerful in that. And I just feel the hope swelling up in those kinds of situations, Dustin, where you can really feel hopeless, especially when you lose everything. If you've ever known a family mm-hmm. who has lost everything in a fire and they think, I don't even have a change of clothes, and they can't even process losing things like your family pictures or maybe a family heirloom or just your home, the literal shelter over your head. And I know that a lot of us just watched with horror the fires that swept through California. And I know there have been some fires in North Carolina and other parts of the country. And those are just, we're so appreciative of the first responders, of the brave firefighters who are out there, you know, trying to help with that. But 8 Days of Hope is going to have a Night of Hope benefit concert for the victims of the California fires. And this is something you can participate from anywhere in the world. So can you tell us a little bit about this Night of Hope?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. So we will be hosting, 8 Days of Hope will be hosting a concert, a benefit concert in the Los Angeles area. I believe that is going to be in the early May. And Jordan Felice and Tyrion will be the two entertainers, performers for that night. And then all of the benefits, all of the proceeds will go back to the community of Los Angeles to support the family and then also the first responders there in the area. It's just us being able to give back just a little bit to the people that put their lives and their family sake up front to help and serve others. Yeah,
so I'm seeing on the website, it is Saturday, May 10th at 6 p.m. That's Pacific time at Lake Avenue Church in Pasadena, California. So if you are in the area, you could go in person. But if you're not, you can buy a ticket online. It looks like the tickets are $20 and they're going to take a love offering. This will benefit those who were impacted by the fires in California. I'm looking at it and, you know, Dustin, when I talked with Steve Tiber before, actually the first time that I talked to him about disaster relief, it was during the middle of a terrible blizzard and he was snowed into his house, but still talking with us and talking about how music is such a big part of the ministry of 8 Days of Hope. So again, this is Saturday, May 10th, 6 p.m. Pacific time, and you can go to 8daysofhope.com and you can get a streaming ticket. You can participate online. So if you've been thinking, yeah, my heart's been going out to them, I don't know what to do, this is a way that you can provide a tangible message of hope that there are people in the world who are thinking about you. Because one of the things about disasters is that everyone's attention is on those things right in the immediate aftermath. We all think about it. But even right now, there are people still years away from completely rebuilding their home after Hurricane Helene in North Carolina. Those needs go on and on. They don't just go away in the first week or two. We'll have more with Dustin Sullivan from 8 Days of Hope, the Rapid Response Director. When we come back, we'll learn more about disaster response. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
This Easter season, we're offering a special downloadable resource that will inspire you and deepen your faith. He Is Risen is a digital booklet featuring powerful articles from The Stand and AFA Journal that explore the life-changing truth of the resurrection, the significance of Easter, and how to share these foundational truths with others. For a limited time only, it's our gift to you for any donation of $5 or more. Help us continue to share biblical truth, defend Christian values, and equip our families. Visit afr.net/offers.
Here am I, all of me. Take my life. It's all for thee. It's all for thee. Here am I, all of me.
Welcome back, friends. That is Take My Life and Let It Be by Passion and Chris Tomlin. And that's exactly what we're talking about today. Are you in a place where you are willing to tell the Lord, take my life and let it be? We're talking about supporting disaster relief efforts. We all have heard stories on the news about disasters befalling people and disasters happening in communities. And I will tell you, having lived in a community that has experienced a very significant disaster, even in my own hometown, it's estimated a third of the homes were flooded. That is just unfathomable. And it was years in the recovery. And I think about when those floodwaters rose and seeing families who lost everything, their home, their furniture, their sense of safety. And you stand on your front porch, you're soaked, you're shaken, you're unsure what is going to come next. You don't even know where to start. You don't know where your next meal's coming from. You don't know where you're going to get clean clothes. You don't know where your family's going to sleep. And that's when organizations like 8 Days of Hope show up. Volunteers from across the country, they pull into town, they have trailers, they have tools, they have hearts full of compassion. And in just days, you've got a place to stay, a reminder that you are not forgotten. 8 Days of Hope is more about more than rebuilding homes. It's restoring dignity and hope and faith after disaster strikes. But every mission starts with someone like you, someone who says, here am I, and take my life. And yes, I'll go. Yes, I'll help. You don't have to be a contractor. You don't have to have chainsaw skills. They'll teach you those. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to show up and use the ways that God has gifted you to respond, whether that's cooking meals or carrying trash or just praying with families who are hurting. You can be the reason someone feels seen again. And there is always someone who can be used. And I think about every summer for about 10 summers, I was a camp nurse, and the nurse who had been in the position before me, she actually passed away rather quickly from an unexpected diagnosis of cancer. And her husband had been part of her ministry for so long, and he was older and didn't have a very good physical mobility, but he had a personality the size of Texas. And you all know that is really big. And he would sit in a chair and he would entertain kids in line. And he would tell them stories, and he would pray for them, and he would care about them. And it was a way that he could be used. So wherever you are, there are things that you can do, whether you go, whether you give, whether you pray. And I hope that you are encouraged to make a difference that lasts a long time after any disaster is seemingly gone. So go to 8daysofhope.com. You can volunteer, you can donate, you can learn more about upcoming trainings, you can attend the benefit conference, the concert, and together we can bring hope where it's needed the most, one family, one hammer, one chainsaw, one prayer at a time. And so, you know, Dustin, one thing that I want to know is that you are now in disaster relief as your life. That is your life now. You're not in banking anymore. You're in disaster relief. And you're constantly seeing sad things happen. You're constantly seeing tragedies befall people, and it just seems so unfair and so just angering sometimes. How do you maintain hope in a world where it seems often so hopeless?
Our only hope is in Christ, right, Jessica?
That's right. Amen.
We were in Tylertown, Mississippi, if you don't mind me sharing this story.
Please do.
We were in Tylertown, Mississippi just a few weeks ago, and we knew that there was loss of life there. And we had a crew out working in this homeowner's yard. And so we pulled up there to check on them, myself, my rapid response manager during that outreach, and the vice president, one of the vice presidents, Chandler Gurley. We pulled up. And we were visiting with our crew, and then we see this family next door where this house was, but now there's just pieces of a house. And so Chandler said she felt the Holy Spirit telling her to let's go over and talk to this family and see if there's anything we can do. So we walked over there, and we met this lady named Tiffany, a young lady, maybe in her late 20s. And we're sitting around, we're talking to Tiffany, and we asked Tiffany her story, and she said, you know, we asked her if everybody was fine after the storm, and she said her and her husband were fine, but they lost their 7-year-old son during the storm.
Oh, my goodness.
And it just broke our hearts immediately because we had heard there was a 7-year-old who had lost his life during the storm, but we had no idea that we would just stumble upon. And like you said earlier in this segment, there's no such thing as coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
God put us there for a purpose, for a reason. So what do you say to someone in that instance? What do you say to someone that just lost a child? There's not much you can say. You let that person talk. You want to hear their story, and then you pray. You pray for strength. You pray with that person. You just pray for strength and guidance, and just that God would heal their hearts as quickly as possible. As we're working there the next day, I went back, and I'm helping a family across the street. And I see a school bus coming down the road, and I see all these children in the school bus and the school bus driver, and I'm watching the school bus they pass by, and the school bus driver pauses as she passes by the house where the little boy lived, and all the children are looking out the window. And I said, you know, this loss didn't just affect that family, but it affected everyone in this community. So it is very heartbreaking to everyone, and there's no words that can express how you feel or you know, help that family other than we do have hope. We have an eternal hope that we will see our loved ones again one day in heaven. And that's all that we have. That's our faith. That's what we live for. And yeah.
You know, oh, Dustin, that just breaks my heart. And I just feel compelled to pray for Tiffany. I'm sure that grief continues, and it is so hard. What do you say in the kinds of disasters like that? Disaster takes on a whole new meaning, just even the word itself, you know, thinking about disasters of losing your home, but it's a completely different level to lose a life. And I think it's encouraging to hear from you, Dustin, someone who came from banking, who now, you know, responds to disasters for a living. And there may be in our community, we hear from time to time about a single incident, but you are seeing this all the time on a daily basis. And to hear your faith and to know that our hope doesn't disappoint, that we have a hope in eternal life, that mom will be reunited with her son again, that she will see him again, that God works all things for good. It's hard to understand. And I just hold on to this quote that I heard, that I actually read in a devotional Bible that I got when I was 16, Dustin, and it said, if God was small enough to be understood, he wouldn't be big enough to be worshiped. And that's what I think about in that time. Well, what else do you see? How else do you see God's presence in just the small everyday moments of disaster response? Can you tell us any other stories or any other ways that you see God at work, not in the coincidences, but in the way he's equipped you to respond and to serve?
Yeah, some of these families, we were at a home the other day, and a family had lost all of their possessions and stuff, and friends had come by to visit to check on the family while we were there serving. And the friends pulled up in the yard, and the friends pulled up, and they told the lady who owned the house, they said, oh, you know, we're so sorry that you lost everything, and this is such a tragedy. And the lady looked at her friends, and she said, nuh-uh. She said, we're going to have good talk right here. We're going to have gospel. This is where Christ is, and we're not going to have any negative talk. It reminded me about the book of Job, right, with his friends coming to him.
Yeah.
And she was just so much, she had such a strong faith that was almost of an unshakable faith, and that was very encouraging, very inspiring to even our volunteers to see that come from somebody. And so sometimes we see that, and that's just a small glimpse of God.
That absolutely is, because she would be completely justified in sitting in a puddle, you know, and having a moment.
Absolutely.
But to say that is absolutely, truly inspiring. And I think that's where the hope comes from. And that's where it's contagious, because people think, how can you have that kind of hope in a situation like this? And if there's something that powerful that can raise your eyes, that can raise your spirit, that can, you know, I think about the verse that says that God is our glory and the lifter of our head. He lifts our heads when they're bowed in despair, in disaster. That is absolutely compelling. Well, tell me, Dustin, I know that you work sometimes with the local church. So why is it important for the church just to respond tangibly during those times of crisis? Yes, we need to pray for people. Yes, we need to share the gospel, but we need to feed them. We need to clothe them. We need to shelter them. How do you work with the church to do that?
Yeah, we love working with churches, and we couldn't do what we do without them. It's a great partnership. So when we go into a community, I'll go in and try to find a church who is open to discussions about allowing our volunteers to stay there. We sleep in Sunday school classes in gymnasiums, but we'll stay there. We'll set up our equipment, and it takes a lot. It takes a lot for a pastor to open up his house, or at the home, his church, to some strangers from all over the country. It takes a lot of faith to do that. But then once we go out to the community and we'll start serving these families, we always point the families back to the church, because the church is there for the long term. We're there just for two or three weeks max. But the church is, that's where they're at. And so we're trying to be the conduit to connect the two there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I experienced here in my hometown, and 8 Days of Hope coming in and partnering with the local churches and really just using your skill set and your knowledge and your experience to equip the local church to respond. Because most local churches, Dustin, honestly, like they don't have that on their annual budget or an annual training. Most are kind of a knee-jerk response, you know, that something happens and then they mobilize and they think, okay, what can we do? But having somebody come in with some of that infrastructure and practical training and practical supports is really important. That's one of the things that convicted me, especially after experiencing Hurricane Harvey. You know, it was dominated the national news, just like Hurricane Helene or the fires in California. And they dominate the national news for a couple of weeks, but then it goes away. But houses are not rebuilt in 2 weeks. I mean, we're talking years in the rebuilding, looking at insurance, if you're fortunate enough to have that or have that resource, and working through all of the debris removal. Even the most recent hurricane that we had here in Houston, it was relatively minor in terms of hurricanes that come through the Gulf Coast, but we had debris sitting on our lawn for almost 2 months waiting for trash to come and pick it up. There's a lot of practical Wow. things that are there. So how do we remember people who have experienced disasters long after the news coverage ends, and we think, oh yeah, you're still thinking about that? Like, we've moved on. How do you continue that sustained approach? And what are ways that we can support the work of 8 Days of Hope to continue that sustained approach through partnership with churches and other things that you do?
Yeah, so a lot of times once we run into a community and they do have a lot of devastation, once we complete our time there, we will turn over our tickets, I guess is what you would want to call it, over to the church, so the church can follow up with the homeowners and see if there's anything else that they can help them with. Perhaps a long-term coalition comes in that establishes itself in the community. and that can help partner with the homeowners to rebuild their homes. And then also we have a rebuilding arm of our ministry where we come in months and months later after all the insurance claims have been worked through, after all any FEMA money has gone through, and we can help those families rebuild those. And that gets very exciting, Jessica, because we'll bring in literally thousands of volunteers from all over the country and the ages. Now, your teenage sons, they can participate in a rebuild because people, they bring their families to that. It's a big family event, but a very, very neat. So we'll come in. We'll do roofing jobs. We'll paint houses. We'll put up new fences around their yards that may have been blown over during the storm months and months ago. So we do things like that to try to rebuild. So it's not all rapid response immediately after the storm, but it's a continuation.
And I love that. And we've talked to your Vice President, Chandler Gurley, as she was responding to Hurricane Helene, standing on the steps of a church with no power, trying to find a signal. We've talked to Colleen Fabling, who's the Safe House Director, and as she stood in the homes that were built for people who experienced trafficking. You can participate by going to 8daysofhope.com. That's spell out the number 8daysofhope.com to support disaster relief efforts. I hope that you give generously, whether it's your time, your talent, or your prayers. We encourage you to do that. And I pray as you do that the Lord will bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you until I see you here again.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.